G'day everyone and welcome back to the Hardball Gets podcast, where we're brought to you by our good friends at Mazda and the Mazda BT50. It's the complete package. And as our WA teams head east this week for hopefully not too long, we have a good chat to a former Eagle who's made the same move in a change of pace to his career. Let's get into it. Well, thanks for joining us once again on the Hardball Gets podcast. My name's Chris Robinson, and my guest today is a man who played 34 games across four seasons at West Coast before making a career switch that we don't usually see from AFL players. Joining us on the line from Melbourne is Tom Swift. Tom, thanks so much for your time and welcome.
Pleasure, mate. Thanks for having me.
No worries at all, mate. Do you want to start by sort of talking us through your occupation now? I mean, most Eagles fans, the last they would have heard of you was leaving the game to study medicine, but you've taken a completely different tack and you're in a completely different field now, aren't you?
Yeah, it's been an interesting one. I've definitely had a fair few permutations through the last sort of 5 to 10 years since I stopped playing, and I don't think I could have predicted where I've ended up, which is back in the game, but certainly happy to be where I am and combine the skills that I've sort of learnt over my time probably during football and then immediately post. So, yeah, ended up at Essendon Football Club, which is something that I never thought would happen. Yeah. But I guess the connection with Woosh, obviously being my coach back in the day and him coaching the club when I first came, was what sort of got me a foot in the door and started the ball rolling on conversations with the footy club. So, yeah, pretty happy with where I've ended up.
So your role there is head of strategy and investments, is that right?
Yeah, correct. That's sort of the official title. But to be honest, I think most people throughout the industry, particularly over the last 12 months, have found themselves wearing a fair few hats. And especially when your title and role are as vague as strategy investments, you sort of generally find yourself doing a hell of a lot of things that you probably not qualified to do. But
okay.
Stuck in and have a go.
Yeah, yeah. So for sort of in layman's terms, to describe to the fans sort of the main stuff that you do there at the Bombers, what would you sort of say?
So I guess the job description, if we want to go by that, is more or less I oversee the club's strategy. So that we've got a 5-year strategic plan that we're currently coming towards the end of, about to roll into a new one. So I oversee the implementation, development, and sort of ongoing support of that plan and the departments as it pertains to those key outcomes that we're targeting. And so I sort of will chip in and help out different departments in different respects to make sure that we're heading in the right direction and everyone's on the same page. So that's more or less the strategy side of things. And then the investment side of things is probably twofold, where we've got a number of existing commercial businesses that sit outside of the core football operations. So specifically, we've got a couple of venues as well as a gym at Windy Hill. And so just overseeing the operations and strategy of those venues, making sure that they continue to provide much needed support to the football club going forward. And then the other side of that role is all about innovation and identifying potential new business opportunities or new ways that the club can leverage its people or its brand in order to, I guess, somewhat protect you from unexpected shocks. I don't think anyone could have been protected from the last 12 months, but that's sort of what we're looking to do as a footy club. And the end outcome in that, obviously, being that we're trying to invest as much as we can within the limits of what we're allowed to spend back into our core product in football and making sure that we've got a footy program that's the best in the competition.
Sure. You sort of touched on it there, but the Woosher factor, he was your coach for all four of your seasons at West Coast. How important was that relationship in you starting that role?
Oh, Woosher's great, yeah. It was a pretty informal sort of conversation that I had with him. And I guess in terms of connecting me with people, he was great, but more so just as a mentor and someone that I could lean on when I was going through a bit of a career transition. Obviously not the first time I'd done it and equally not the first time I'd lent on him for support during that time. But I was coming out of a career in investment banking, which was pretty time consuming and sort of really difficult to get an appropriate work-life balance. So I sort of made the call to step away from that, chasing, as I said, one, a bit of work-life balance, but then also a bit more passion in what I was doing. And And yeah, a few chats with Woosh led me to Zave Campbell, who's our CEO, and we continued to talk probably for about 6 months before anything officially got discussed. It was more just an informal conversation on how I could look to, I guess, leverage the skills that I learned through my time in banking, as well as my understanding of the football or sporting environment, and took it from there. So yeah, like he was great, I suppose, more in just that mentoring and support role, as opposed to genuinely sort of connecting me into roles at the club.
Yeah, and it's obviously not your core business, but as far as the playing group goes, do you have much or any contact with those guys at all?
I do, actually. Yeah, there's a few of the guys too. Clearly, I'm not in Perth, so it's difficult to maintain contact with the majority of them. But the guys that are over here, I go out of my way to make sure I'm in close contact with. Sam Butler's one of my good mates over here, so it's nice to have that, to have those familiar faces, but equally it's nice to be in a new environment as well.
Yeah, definitely. And from a current Essendon point of view, do you sort of have a relationship with the players on the Bombers list at the moment?
I do and I don't, mate. They're all pretty young, it feels. But there's definitely a few old fossils floating around, Hills and Zacher and guys like that, who were actually in my draft pool, mm-hmm. I believe. And sort of feels a bit weird that they're sort of still rolling around doing the same thing every day. But what feels to me like it was a lifetime ago, but obviously a lot of respect for those guys, and they've had incredibly successful careers. So it's good to be able to still connect to those guys that are still actively involved in the game, I guess.
For sure. And talk us through the decision when you did decide to go and study medicine. How long did that last for, and why did you sort of make the decision to move into that sort of finance kind of space?
To be honest, I came out of footy having been a very structured and diligent and routine person, and I was probably craving just a bit of chaos and a bit of randomness in my life.
Yeah, okay.
I think probably since that point in time, I've been a bit more of a fly by the seat of your pants type operator, and that decision making process was no different to that. I pursued that line of thinking and took all the necessary admission exams, and actually got a spot before sort of deciding that I was already halfway through my commerce degree during my time at the club. And one of those things where you know, it would have been a great experience and a great opportunity had I pursued that. But equally, I think, you choose one path in life and you sacrifice another. And I don't think there's necessarily a right way to go mm-hmm. about it. So I decided, somewhat in the spur of the moment, to just continue along the finance commerce path, and can't necessarily say I regret the decision. I think it would have been different, but you know, here I am, and I'm happy enough. So
it's certainly been a unique career path that you've chosen. We'll take you back to the start of your AFL career. You were picked 20 in the 2008 draft, a really good draft for West Coast, considering Nick Natanui and Luke Shuey were the two guys taken by the Eagles in front of you. What was it like for you as a teenager back then, getting drafted to a club in your home state and being alongside those two guys in particular and trying to build something at the Eagles?
Well, first and foremost, massive shock. I don't think I really spoke to West Coast at all leading up to the draft.
Right.
I'd spoken to almost every interstate team and Freo and West Coast were two that had limited communication. So whether that was because they'd already known me through other people or being a West Australian or whatever it was, I had my bags packed and I was sort of ready to go. It wasn't necessarily a done deal being drafted at all, given I'd had a bit of injury history leading into the draft, but had I been drafted, which I ended up obviously being drafted, I was much more expecting to be heading east, and so that was the first shock. But then obviously to be called out by West Coast and have that familiarity and family support through my early years was massive. And then, as you stated before, some of the characters that the club's been able to get through that draft and some subsequent drafts, and guys like Shep and Gaffey and a few of those guys that are now the core of their team, it's credit to the club, but also in terms of the football ability, but also just good, genuine people. So I'm grateful that I was able to spend the amount of time I was with them, hopefully have lifelong friendships, and got the utmost respect for pretty much all those blokes. That, as I said, they're not just good, great footballers. They're ripping human beings as well, more importantly.
What were your emotions like when you did get drafted to West Coast, mate? Were you sort of relieved to stay home, or had you been looking forward to that challenge of heading over east? What kind of went through your head when you heard your name called?
Yeah, a bit of both, I think. I was sort of looking forward to going east, to be honest, and I suppose that's probably why I've ended up over here at some stage. So that was something that, you know, at the time I was not necessarily disappointed about, but could have gone either way and I would have been just as happy. As I said, I think one of the massive benefits that I got from being drafted to my home state, in hindsight, was just having my family and friends around me to keep me grounded to an extent, but also just provide those external support networks. Because I think sometimes it's just all too often you get young kids that don't have that, particularly those that move into state, and they can sometimes just sort of get chewed up and spat out pretty quickly. So even though, you know, some might look at my career and say I'm no different to those blokes that do get chewed up and spat out, I do think that I was able to have a fairly firm grounding and certainly learned a shitload during my time there. So it was short, but it was sweet.
Talk us through your recollections of your debut game, Tom, because it was a bit of a baptism of fire for you. It was a Friday night fixture against Carlton at Docklands, and Carlton were reasonably up and about at this point. Chris Judd was still in his prime. They got the number on you guys, but what are your recollections of that night, the Friday night stage for you to make your debut? What do you sort of think back to when you look at that time?
Mate, to be perfectly honest, I cannot remember a single thing. I'm pretty sure it was Adam Hunter's 150th game. That's about as far as my memory stretch. But that first year in general was just an absolute blur.
Yeah, okay.
Dotting the I's and crossing the T's and getting familiar with just this completely new environment, where as an 18-year-old you think you've got it all sorted and you think you know how to train and how to prepare, and you're just so far off the mark. So there's just a million things coming at you at once, and I guess your first game and your first year is no different from that.
Yeah, okay. So do you have any recollection of the moment you got told you're in the team, sort of running out there on the Friday night? Do you have anything?
Well, I do remember the moment that Woosh came and told me. He's as most people understand, he's a pretty straight down the line type character, so there wasn't too much carry on, like you see with some of these modern day coaches.
didn't get the big reveal video where you're calling your family or what have you?
No, none of that. Content wasn't keen back in the day. It was just pretty cut and dry. But no, I certainly remember that moment, and something I'll always obviously be very proud of. It was a hell of a lot of fun. To as much as you love as a West Coast or Fremantle player, I'm sure you love playing at in WA, particularly when Subi Oval was going around. You love playing there because you just had such an advantage. It was a bit of a thrill to be able to make the debut over in Melbourne and under the Friday night light. So I definitely remember moments of it, but to be honest, there's not one particular moment that sort of stood out.
Yeah, okay. Well, your 10th game later that year, you might not have too much of a recollection of this either, but it was also a Friday night game at Subi against Ben Cousins as Richmond, and you finished with 26 touches, 6 clearances, 10 tackles, and most importantly, 3 Brownlow votes, which places you in real esteemed company as someone to earn the 3 votes as an Eagle in your first 10 games. I've actually got the list here in terms of guys who have done it. I'll go through it now. So you were able to get 3 votes in your 10th game. Ben Cousins did it in his 9th game for West Coast. Dwayne Lamb did it in his ninth. Matt Prittis did it in his eighth. Ash Hansen did it in his eighth. Braden Lyle in his eighth. Peter Matera in his sixth. Chris Mainwaring in his third. Andrew Donnelly in his third. Troy Wilson's a surprise one in his third. And Brett Heddy getting the three votes in his second game for West Coast. So you're in pretty good company there, Tom, with the three voter. Do you remember that game against the Tigers at Subi on that Friday night?
Yeah, I don't know if I sit too comfortably. I might have been but I do remember that game. I do remember playing on Cuz. Obviously, you know, a huge idol of most kids my age growing up in terms of football ability and just. And so that was a pretty surreal experience. So I definitely remember actually playing on him for large parts of the game. Yep. Probably why I ended up actually being able to find so much of the footy, because he wouldn't have given a shit about what I did or where I was going as a 10-game player.
Yeah, so yeah.
Probably got him to thank for that. But no, that was a massive thrill. I do remember that. I do remember that game quite clearly.
Yeah.
It was also Chad Fletcher's last game at the club, which was a pretty special moment because he was someone that, whilst only had a year with him, he was a ripping fella and someone that I got along with really well.
For sure. Did you, just taking you back to that first game against Juddy, mate, did you get anywhere near Juddy in that Carlton game or you can't really recall?
I got near him, but not when he had the footy.
Yeah.
He'd pretty quickly be 10 metres away from me. But no, one of the good things about, I guess, my learning experience at the club in my early games was Scotty Burns, our midfield coach, is mm-hmm. one of the great coaches going around these days. Mm-hmm. He sort of used to put a lot of responsibility on the younger guys to play those defensive roles on some of the better players. So not necessarily a tagging role, but just an accountable role where you'd roll through the likes of Juddy and Joe Watson and even Pav when he was running through there. You know, Cuzzy, as I said, so that was a massive thrill as well, because the best way to learn, I guess, is just to mimic the best, and that's what a lot of us young fellows had the chance to do during that time.
Yeah. Well, mate, as I said, three votes in your 10th game. Chris Judd didn't get his first three-vote game until his 37th game, so that's something that you've got over the great man. And then talk me through sort of 10, 11, 12. You were sort of in and out of the side. You're a substitute for a few games in 12. And those years, particularly 11 and 12, when West Coast were right there in contention, that sort of rebirth of that contender. How much of a challenge was it? How frustrating was it, I guess, being on the fringes, in and out for such a strong side? Was that a sort of mental challenge for you in that squad?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's... obviously, you want to be in the team every week, and it's extremely challenging when, particularly, you know, a few of those times, it's probably no fault of your own. It's the result of getting experienced players back in the team, which I completely understand and appreciate. It was challenging. It was definitely challenging, and you had your moments. And my answer to those challenges at the time was always the harder you work, the luckier you get. And so probably to be honest, to my detriment at times, I would just continue to put my head down and just keep working harder and harder. And, you know, there's a part of me now that looks back on that and says, maybe if I just took the foot off the accelerator and just, not enjoyed it, but just maybe took it a bit more easy, then maybe my career might have been longer. Not that it was cut short because of any reason, but you know, maybe things might have played a little bit differently. But still, no regrets with that.
Yeah,
with how it played out. So, yeah.
One of the great Ross Lyon sayings of the past few years is: "It's never as good. It's never as bad. Never as good as it seems. Never as bad as it seems." Did you have to kind of try and find that mindset from a week to week basis when? I'd imagine your feelings would sort of swing depending on how well you performed at the weekend, whether you're in the side, out of the side. Do you have to try and really work hard to find that sort of middle ground?
Yeah, you do. Like it's probably one of the most, if not the most valuable lesson I learned out of my time during football, is controlling your emotions during that roller coaster, because there's really very few other circumstances in life where as you say, every week you're faced with a challenge and you've got the opportunity to perform, but equally sometimes circumstances aren't in your control and things can play out in a way that you don't want them to, and you go searching for answers, and sometimes the answer's just that you just need to forget about it and move on. But that was definitely one of the most valuable lessons I learned, was just how to control my emotions and my thoughts. And that's definitely, as I said, like, been a huge advantage for me progressing through life, because I feel like when I've been faced with difficult situations, you can always, as trivial as a game of football is in some ways, you know, at the time when you're in the moment, it does feel a little bit like life and death. Mm. I don't mean to use that term too lightly, but that's sort of how most footballers approach the game these days. And so you do learn that resilience, and you do learn how to control your emotions in those environments.
Yeah. I was going to ask about footy fans as well. Bless them. They can get very passionate. They can get over the top. As far as, you know, detractors that you might have had, how sort of closely did you hear some of that stuff, and how much do you sort of try and did you try and sort of block that out or take it on? Like, how did you deal with sort of the external kind of noise that that came your way?
Yeah, I mean, I'm the first, you know, I'm not naive to think that I didn't absolutely cop it during my time, because I was the absolute whipping boy for a few years there, which, look, it was a funny one, because again, like, at the time it was extremely difficult to cop, because you're just a kid, you know, putting your trade forward and trying to do the best you can, and through no fault of effort, you're sort of being dragged from pillar to post by people that you don't even know, and that took a couple of years to really comprehend and understand. But equally, as I was referring to before, it's sort of one of those things that once you do sort of understand where these people are coming from, why their emotions are, why they are, and it's not necessarily directed at you as an individual. It's more just their way of expressing their emotion and their passion towards the team. I think it was genuinely a positive for me that I got out of my time, and I was able to flip it that way rather than sort of getting too caught up and worrying too much about myself and I guess the old classic what other people think about you, because whilst it's important to everyone, and I won't sit here and say that, you know, other people's perceptions of me aren't important, it's obviously the people that are close to you that are the most important opinions, and those are the ones that I learned the hard way to trust and to rely on.
Yeah. And as far as social media goes, since you finished your AFL career, it's only ramped up more and more and more, obviously. What's sort of your advice for footballers now, and even some stuff that you might talk about with Essendon guys, as far as social media, fan feedback, trying to block on or block out or limit that noise? How do you sort of see the environment now and how tough it continues to get?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely 10 times what it was. I'm a bit of an old school operator, so I don't subscribe to social media or any of that. I'm still sort of not really active on those platforms. But equally, to be honest, if I were to have advice for young players at the club or whatever it is, it's an extremely powerful and valuable tool that you can use if you use it the right way. I think, like, the message that I always have with social media is that there's genuine value in a lot of those platforms in terms of the utility you can get from them. It's just, obviously, there's an addictive component to it as well, and some dark corners of the web which you don't want to venture into. And so as long as you can steer yourself away from that and just focus on, I guess, the positive side of it, and making sure that anything you are putting out there is genuine and to be honest, filtered. I'm not a filtered person. I like to be quite unfiltered, but in that environment, you sort of have to have your guard up a little bit. But yeah, that's sort of where I sit on that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Your retirement at the end of 2012 took a few people by surprise after just those four seasons. As I said, how long did you spend sort of thinking about leading up to that decision and that announcement? And did you have a new contract on the table from West Coast at that time?
I did, yes. I never got around to actually sort of negotiating the specifics or even understanding the specifics. Because I think it was literally simultaneous. It was a simultaneous conversation as when I went in to tell them that I was no longer wanting to play. Yep. And so it was sort of mainly me telling them, and anything that they were telling me was sort of pretty lost, to be honest, because the head was spinning. So, but no, I did have an offer. It was a decision that was probably made over the course of the better part of 2 years. It wasn't a decision that I made lightly. It wasn't a decision based on emotion or based on, I know it's like, it's very easy to have seen my situation and say, well, I guess, copped it a fair bit, don't blame him for stepping away, all those kind of things. But I don't know, as I was, again, referring to before, I think my perspective on life is always, there's a million different things you can do, and I don't necessarily want to be someone who does one thing, even if you do it unbelievably well, my whole life. I want to experience the full spectrum of things that life has to offer. And I think for me, I was fortunate enough that I had a solid grounding at school and through education, and I had opportunities to pursue there. And at the end of the day, I look back, and as much as I would have loved to have kept playing, to be honest, but I think looking back now, if I had have made that decision and I had to sacrifice the ability to pursue studies and professional careers outside of football, I probably would have regretted that more than how I look back on football now.
Yeah. When you did let Woosher and also the players know that decision, how taken by surprise were they, and did you get guys trying to talk you out of it, or were they pretty understanding of where you're at?
Yeah, I fell into two buckets. There were a fair few blokes who just fed in and did not understand.
Yeah.
That was sort of, which is fair enough.
Yeah.
And I appreciated that as well. But I think probably my better mates at the club understood where I was coming from. Clearly they, you know, were challenging me and playing devil's advocate and encouraging me to really, and this was probably before I'd actually made the decision, because I engaged a lot of people close to me. But when push came to shove, and I decided that was the right path for me. To be honest, everyone was nothing but supportive, and that's probably the West Coast Eagles Football Club in a nutshell. Like, I've never, you know, with all due respect to the Essendon Football Club and other organisations I've been a part of, I've never been part of an organisation that's quite so supportive and caring for their people. And I think if you look at a lot of players, staff that have passed through that club, they're all in, all of them, but a lot of them are in extremely fortunate and privileged situations as a result of their experience at the club. And that's in no small part due to the direct influence that club still has on people's lives, mine included. So I can't speak highly enough of the club itself.
Yeah, that's good to hear, mate. Are you you're still only 30? Are you still getting a kick somewhere, or have you got no interest? Have you turned your back on the game altogether?
I wouldn't say I've turned my back. I probably had, when I was over in Perth, I had a couple of years off for no other reason than I was just too busy doing other things.
Yep.
Had a kick around for Claremont and did my hammy every second week year, which wasn't ideal, but sort of again reiterates how tough it is to actually be a footballer, something I took for granted a little bit. Then I moved over to Melbourne. Similarly, was just too busy with work to think about doing anything. Ended up playing a couple of seasons before COVID hit at the University Blacks footy club in Navaha, which was, again, another awesome footy club I was lucky to be a part of, sort of full of a lot of interstate and country boys that come to Melbourne looking for connection and community, and that's a really strong and vibrant community that they provide there. So that's another really, really strong club that I've been a part of. But then I think COVID hit and a fair few things have changed in life recently. I've sort of move down the coast. I'm moving down, as I said, down in Barwon Heads.
Fantastic.
Sort of an hour and 15 out of Melbourne.
Yep.
Just looking for a bit of a sea change, a bit of a change in perspective. And I think COVID probably brought that on a lot of people. But I just love being out here amongst nature and near the beach and, you know, going camping a lot and just doing a lot of those kind of things. So I wouldn't say I've shut the door. The Barwon Heads seagulls are just down the road and I hear they're a formidable outfit. But for now it's just sort of as much as I hate to say this now that I'm not playing footy anymore, but it's literally week to week for me, just concentrating on what I'm doing this week and then thinking about fun things I can go out and get involved in on the weekend.
One week at a time, mate. It's the footballer's mantra. I'm sure the Seagulls will be able to squeeze you into that midfield somewhere. If you do come calling, you probably rack up 45 touches a game. Mate, before we let you get out of here, we'll do a little segment that our producer Josh has got an intro for called Over Under.
Over?
Yeah.
Nah. Under.
So I'm going to throw a number at you and you tell me whether you think it's going to go over or under. It's an Essendon-related one. So 7.5 is the number. And the question is wins for the season. So the Bombers have certainly showing some impressive signs with some of those young guys running through there, mate. Do you see them going over that 7.5, which is kind of a rough line? You've got two wins at the moment. Do you see them going over that for the season and knocking on the door of the eight?
Cheers, mate. I'd lose my job if
I had, a hankering you might go over.
No, it's genuinely a great environment
at
the moment. I think the Ben Rutten and Josh Marnie and team down there are doing an amazing job. So yeah, definitely well over that.
Yeah, which of the young talent has sort of caught your eye so far with what they've been able to do, particularly this season? We've seen Nick Cox stand up, Archie Perkins. Who do you sort of really like the look of?
I mean, both the guys you mentioned there, I think I like the look of young Archie. I think he's got that sort of competitiveness about him, and he's also got that really raw aspect to him where you can see a lot of things that are going right, but also a lot of things that he could get a lot better at, which I don't look at and go, you know, that's a weakness or a flaw. I look at that and go, well, he's going to be a good player.
That's exciting. So, yep.
You got to remember that. You know, I'm not going to be the first person to say this, but him, those two and also Zach and a lot of those guys that got drafted this year, they haven't played footy in 24 months.
Of course.
Whatever it was. So they're stepping in, playing men for the first time without actually having had a season leading into it. So they're doing unbelievably well so far. So hats off to them.
Yeah. It's obviously a really unique set of circumstances with some of those young guys. And as far as, last question, mate, as far as the Eagles go, do you still sort of keep a relatively close eye on them and how do you sort of assess their progress 7 games into the season?
I do keep tabs on the boys. It's a really interesting one because it just feels like there is no stability in the competition at the moment. I don't know if it's a function of last year or what's happened, but or it was just the progression of the game, and now we literally have entered the stage where anyone can win any week.
Mm.
So I think particularly this stage of the year, it's difficult to read into anything. So, look, I mean, they're facing their challenges and they probably haven't had the start of the season that they would like.
Mm-hmm.
But equally, I think probably that team more so than most, if you get your top 10 players right, then they look pretty scary. So I think that's probably their number one sort of to do at the moment is to get all their players out in the park fit and playing regularly and the rest will take care of itself.
Yeah. Are you still in touch with some of the guys who are still on that list?
No, not regularly. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, to the extent I'm back in Perth, I would catch up with a few of the guys.
Yeah, great.
As I said, there's a few guys over here. As I mentioned, Sam Butler, Scotty Sherwood, you guys over here that I'm sort of in contact with more regularly, but yeah, Perth's a long way away. So
it is, mate. It's the longest away from that neck of the woods than it's ever been, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Awesome, mate. Look, Tom, we'll let you get out of here, mate. I know you're a very busy man, and we certainly do appreciate you taking the time to have a chat. I'm sure the Eagles fans would be really interested to see how you've been going in your career and the path that you've taken and everything like that. So, mate, thanks so much for taking the time, and all the best at the Bombers for the rest of the season.
Yeah, absolute pleasure, mate. Anytime.
Awesome. And thanks also to our listeners, and thanks to Mazda and the Mazda BT50. It's the complete package. Don't miss the 2-minute warning back on Monday. Enjoy your weekend of footy, and we'll chat to you next week.